nipples do not actually show breasts, just guy's expression as he feels them and girl's expression as he feels them and girl's expression as guy announces his rating. Still, bad show. Pam blew up at kids. We are in most difficult period ever for family. This how they behave? When kids born, Pam and I dropped everything, youthful dreams of travel, adventure, etc., to be good parents. Has not been exciting life. Has been much drudgery. Many nights, tasks undone, have stayed up late, exhausted, doing tasks. On many occasions, disheveled plus tired, baby poop and or vomit on our shirt or blouse, one of us has stood smiling wearily slash angrily at camera being held by other, hair shaggy because haircuts expensive, unfashionable glasses slipping down noses because never had time to get glasses tightened. And after all that, look where we are. It is unfortunate. Just now went down hall to check on kids. Thomas sleeping with Ferber. This is not allowed. Eva in bed with Lily. This not allowed. Eva, source of all mayhem, sleeping like baby. Felt like waking Eva, telling Eva all will be well, she has good heart, is just young plus confused. Did not do. Eva needs rest. On Lily's desk. Poster Lily was working on for Favorite Things Day at school. Poster equals photo of each SG, plus map of home country, plus stories Lily apparently got during interview with each. Gwen, Moldova, equals very tough due to Moldavian youth. Used bloody sheets found in trash plus duct tape to make soccer ball. Then, after much practice with bloody sheet ball, nearly made Olympic team. Betty, Philippines, has daughter who, when swimming, will sometimes hitch ride on shell of sea turtle. Lisa, Somalia, once saw lion on roof of her uncle's mini lorry. Tammy, Laos, had pet water buffalo. Water buffalo stepped on her foot. Now Tammy must wear a special shoe. Fun fact, their names, Betty, Tammy, et al., not their real names. These are SG names given by Greenway at time of arrival. Tammy equals Januka equals happy ray of sun. Betty equals Ninita equals blessed beloved. Gwen equals Evgenia. Does not know what her name means. Lisa equals Ian equals happy traveler. SG is very much on my mind tonight, future reader. Where are they now? Why did they go? Just do not get. Letter comes, family celebrates, girl sheds tears, stoically packs bag, thinks, must go, am family's only hope. Puts on brave face, promises she will return as soon as contract complete. Her mother feels, father feels, we cannot let her go. But they do. They must. Whole town walks girl to train station, bus station, ferry stop. Group rides in brightly colored van to tiny regional airport. More tears, more vows. As train, ferry, plane pulls away, she takes last fond look at surrounding hills, river, quarry, shacks, whatever, i.e., all she has ever known of world. Saying to self, be not afraid, you will return and return in victory with big bag of gifts, etc. And now? No money, no papers. Who will remove Microline? Who will give her job? When going for job, must fix hair so as to hide scars at insertion points. When will she ever see home plus family again? Why would she do? Why would she ruin it all, leave our yard? Could have had nice long run with us. What in the world was she seeking? What could she want so much that would make her pull such desperate stunt? Jerry just now left for night. Empty rack out in yard, looking strange in moonlight. Note to self, call Greenway, have them take ugly thing away. Home. 1. Like in the old days, I came out of the dry creek behind the house and did my little tap on the kitchen window. Get in here, you, Ma said. Inside were piles of newspaper on the stove and piles of magazines on the stairs and a big wad of hangers sticking out of the broken oven. All of that was as usual. New was a water stain the shape of a cat head above the fridge, and the old orange rug rolled up halfway. "Still ain't no beeping cleaning lady," Ma said. I looked at her funny. "Beeping?" I said. "Beep you," she said. "They've been on my case at work." It was true Ma had a pretty good potty mouth and was working at a church now, so we stood there looking at each other. Then some guy came tromping down the stairs, older than Ma even, in just boxers and hiking boots and a winter cap, long ponytail hanging out the back. "Who's this?" he said. "My son," Ma said shyly. "Mikey, this is Harris." "What's your worst thing you ever did over there?" Harris said. "What happened to Alberto?" I said. "Alberto flew the coop," Ma said. "Alberto showed his ass," Harris said. "I hold nothing against that beeper," Ma said. "I hold a lot against that fucker," Harris said, "including he owes me $10. "Harris ain't dealing with his potty mouth," Ma said.
"She's only doing it because of work," Harris explained.
"Harris don't work," Ma said.
"Well, if I did work, it wouldn't be at a place that tells me how I can talk," Harris said. "It would be at a place that lets me talk how I like. A place that accepts me for who I am. That's the kind of place I'd be willing to work."
"There ain't many of that kind of place," Ma said.
"Places that let me talk how I want," Harris said, "or places that accept me for who I am?"
"Places you'd be willing to work," Ma said. "How long's he staying?" Harris said. "Long as he wants," Ma said.
"My house is your house," Harris said to me.
"It ain't your house," Ma said.
"Give the kid some food at least," Harris said.
"I will, but it ain't your idea," Ma said, and shooed us out of the kitchen.
"Great lady," Harris said. "Had my eyes on her for years. Then Alberto split. That I don't get. You got a great lady in your life, the lady gets sick, you split?"
"Ma's sick," I said. "She didn't tell you?" he said.
He grimaced, made his hand into a fist, put it upside his head. "Lump," he said, "but you didn't hear it from me." Ma was singing now in the kitchen. "I hope you're at least making bacon," Harris called out. "Kid comes home, deserves some friggin' bacon."
"Why not stay out of it?" Ma called back. "You just met him."
"I love him like my own son," Harris said.
"What a ridiculous statement," Ma said. "You hate your son."
"I hate both my sons," Harris said.
"And you'd hate your daughter if you ever meet her," Ma said.
Harris beamed, as if touched that Ma knew him well enough to know he would inevitably hate any child he fathered. Ma came in with some bacon and eggs on a saucer.
"Might be a hair in it," she said. "Lately it's like I'm beepin' sheddin'."
"You are certainly welcome," Harris said.
"You didn't beep and do nothing," Ma said. "Don't take credit. Go in there and do the dishes. That would help."
"I can't do dishes and you know that," Harris said, "on account of my rash."
"He gets a rash from water," Ma said. "Ask him why he can't dry."
"On account of my back," Harris said.
"He's the king of if," Ma said. "What he ain't is king of actually do."
"Soon as he leaves, I'll show you what I'm king of," Harris said.
"Oh, Harris, that is too much. That is truly disgusting," Ma said.
Harris raised both hands over his head like winner and still champ.
"We'll put you in your old room," Ma said.
2. On my bed was a hunting bow and a purple Halloween cape with built-in ghost face.
"That's Harris's beep," Ma said.
"Ma," I said, "Harris told me." I made my hand into a fist, put it upside my head. She gave me a blank look. "Or maybe I didn't understand him right," I said. "Lump, he said you've got a..."
"Or maybe he's a big beepin' liar," she said. "He makes up crazy beep about me all the time. It's like his hobby. He told the mailman I had a fake leg. He told Eileen at the deli one of my eyes was glass. He told the guy at the hardware I get fainting dealies and froth at the mouth whenever I get mad. Now that guy's always rushing me out of there."
To show how fine she was, Ma did a jumping jack. Harris was clomping upstairs.
"I won't tell you told about the lump," Ma said. "You don't tell I told about him being a liar."
Now this was starting to seem like the old days. "Ma," I said, "where are Renee and Ryan living?"
Ma said.
"They got a sweet place over there," Harris said, "rolling in the dough."
"I'm not sure that's the best idea," Ma said.
"Your ma thinks Ryan's a hitter," Harris said.
"Ryan is a hitter," Ma said. "I can always tell a hitter."
He hits, I said. He hits Renee? You didn't hear it from me, Ma said.
He better not start hitting that baby, Harris said. Sweet little Martiny. Kid's super cute.
Although what the beep kind of name is that, Ma said. I told Renee that. I said that.
Is that a boy or a girl name, Harris said.
What the beep you talking about, Ma said. You seen it. You held it.
Looks like an elf, Harris said.
But girl or boy elf, Ma said. Watch, he really don't know.
Well, it was wearing green, Harris said, so that don't help me.
Think, Ma said. What did we buy it?
You'd think I'd know, boy or girl, Harris said, it being my freaking grandkid.
It ain't your grandkid, Ma said. We bought it a boat.
A boat could be for boys or girls, Harris said. Don't be prejudiced. A girl can love a boat just like a boy can love a doll or a bra.
Well, we didn't buy it a doll or a bra, Ma said. We bought it a boat.
I went downstairs, got the phone book. Renee and Ryan lived over on Lincoln, 27 Lincoln. 3. 27 Lincoln was in the good part of downtown. I couldn't believe the house. Couldn't believe the turrets. The back gate was redwood and opened so smooth like the hinge was hydraulic. Couldn't believe the yard. I squatted in some bushes by the screened-in porch. Inside, some people were talking. Renee, Ryan, Ryan's parents sounded like. Ryan's parents had sonorous, confident voices that seemed to have been fabricated out of previous, less sonorous, confident voices by means of sudden money. "Say what you will about Lon Brewster," Ryan's dad said, "but Lon came out and retrieved me from Feldspar that time I had a flat."
"In that ridiculous, broiling heat," said Ryan's mom.
"And not a word of complaint," said Ryan's dad, "a completely charming person."
"Almost as charming, or so you told me, as the Flemings," she said.
"And the Flemings are awfully charming," he said.
"And the good they do," she said. "They flew a plane load of babies over here."
"Russian babies," he said, "with hare lips."
"Soon as the babies arrived, they were whisked into various operating rooms all around the country," she said. "And who paid?"
"The Flemings," he said.
"Didn't they also set aside some money for college," she said, "for the Russians?"
"Those kids went from being disabled and a collapsing nation to being set for life in the greatest country in the world," he said. "And who did this? A corporation? The government?"
"One private couple," she said.
"A truly visionary pair of folks," he said. There was a long, admiring pause.
"Although you'd never know it by how harshly he speaks to her," she said.
"Well, she can be awfully harsh with him as well," he said.
"Sometimes it's just him being harsh with her and her being harsh right back," she said.
"It's like the chicken or the egg," he said.
"Only with harshness," she said.
"Still, you can't help but love the Flemings," he said.
"We should be so wonderful," she said. "When was the last time we rescued a Russian baby?"
"Well, we do all right," he said. "We can't afford to fly a bunch of Russian babies over here, but I think in our own limited way, we do just fine."
"We can't even fly over one Russian," she said. "Even a Canadian baby with a hare lip would be beyond our means."
"We could probably drive up there and pick one up," he said. "But then what? We can't afford the surgery and can't afford the college, so the baby's just sitting here in America instead of Canada, still with the lip issue."
"Did we tell you, kids?" she said. "We're adding 5 shops. 5 shops around the Tri-City area, each with a fountain."
"That's great, Mom," Ryan said.
"That is so great," Renee said.
"And maybe if those 5 shops do well, we can open another 3 or 4 shops and at that time revisit this whole Russian hare lip issue," Ryan's father said.
"You guys continue to amaze," Ryan said. Renee stepped out with a baby. "I'm going to step out with a baby," she said.
Four. The baby had taken its toll. Renee seemed wider, less peppy, also paler, like someone had run a color-leaching beam over her face and hair. The baby did look like an elf. The elf baby looked at a bird, pointed at the bird.
"Bird," said Renee.
The elf baby looked at their insane pool.
"For swimming," said Renee, "but not yet. Not yet, right?"
The elf baby looked at the sky.
"Clouds," Renee said. "Clouds make rain."
It was like the baby was demanding with its eyes,
Hurry up, tell me what all this shit is so I can master it, open a few shops.
The baby looked at me. Renee nearly dropped the baby.
Mike, Mikey, holy shit, she said.
Then she seemed to remember something and hustled back to the porch door.
Rye, she called. Rye King, can you come get the Marthart?
Ryan took the baby.
Love you, I heard him say. Love you more, she said.
Then she came back, no baby.
I call him Rye King, she said, blushing.
I heard that, I said.
Mikey, she said, did you do it?
Can I come in? I said.
Not today, she said. Tomorrow. No, Thursday. His folks leave Wednesday. Come over Thursday, we'll hash it all out.
Hash what out? I said.
Whether you can come in, she said.
I didn't realize that was a question, I said.
Did you, she said, do it?
Ryan seems nice, I said.
Oh, God, she said. Literally the nicest human being I've ever known.
Except when he's hitting, I said.
When what?
She said.
Ma told me, I said.
Told you what? She said. That Ryan hits? Hits me? Ma said that?
Don't tell her I told, I said, a little panicked, as of old.
Ma's deranged, she said. Ma's out of her friggin' mind. Ma would say that. You know who's gonna get hit? Ma, by me.
Why didn't you write me about Ma? I said.
What about her? She said suspiciously.
She's sick? I said.
She told you? She said.
I made a fist and held it upside my head.
What's that? She said.
A lump? I said.
Ma doesn't have a lump, she said. She's got a fucked up heart. Who told you she's got a lump?
Harris, I said.
Oh, Harris, perfect, she said.
Inside the house, the baby started crying.
Go, Renee said. We'll talk Thursday. But first,
she took my face in her hands and turned my head so I was looking in the window at Ryan, who was heating a bottle at the kitchen sink.
Does that look like a hitter? She said.
No, I said. And it didn't. Not at all.
Jesus, I said. Does anybody tell the truth around here?
I do, she said. You do.
I looked at her, and for a minute she was 8 and I was 10, and we were hiding in the doghouse while Ma and Dad and Aunt Tony, on mushrooms, trashed the patio.
Mikey, she said, I need to know. Did you do it?
I jerked my face out of her hands, turned, went.
Go see your own wife, doofus, she shouted after me. Go see your own babies.
Five. Ma was on the front lawn, screaming at this low-slung fat guy. Harris was looming in the background, now and then hitting or kicking something to show how scary he could get when enraged.
This is my son, Ma said, who served, who just came home, and this is how you do us?
I'm grateful for your service, the man said to me. Harris kicked the metal garbage can.
Will you please tell him to stop doing that? The man said.
He has no control over me when I'm mad, Harris said. No one does.
Do you think I like this? The man said. She hasn't paid rent in 4 months.
3, Ma said.
This is how you treat the family of a hero? Harris said. He's over there fighting and you're over here abusing his mother?
Friend, excuse me, I'm not abusing, the man said. This is evicting. If she'd paid her rent and I was evicting, that would be abusing.
And here I work for a beepin' church, Ma shouted.
The man, though low-slung and fat, was admirably bold. He went inside the house and came out carrying the TV with a bored look on his face, like it was his TV and he preferred it in the yard.
No, I said.
I appreciate your service, he said. I took him by the shirt. I was, by this time, good at taking people by their shirts, looking them in the eye, speaking directly. Whose house is this? I said.
Mine, he said.
I put my foot behind him, dropped him on the grass.
Go easy, Harris said.
That was easy, I said, and carried the TV back inside. 6. That night, the sheriff arrived with some movers who emptied the house onto the lawn. I saw them coming and went out the back door and watched it all from High Street, sitting in the deer stand behind the Nestons.
Ma was out there, head in hands, weaving in and out of her heaped-up crap. It was both melodramatic and not. I mean, when Ma feels something deeply, that's what she does, melodrama. Which makes it, I guess, not melodrama. Something had been happening to me lately where a plan would start flowing directly down to my hands and feet. When that happened, I knew to trust it. My face would get hot and I'd feel sort of like, go, go, go. It had served me well, mostly. Now the plan flowing down was, grab Ma, push her inside, make her sit, round up Harris, make him sit, torch the place, or at least make the first motions of torching the place to get their attention, make them act their age. I flew down the hill, pushed Ma inside, sat her on the stairs, grabbed Harris by the shirt, put my foot behind him, dropped him to the floor, then held a match to the carpet on the stairs and, once it started burning, raised a finger like, quiet. Through me runs the power of recent dark experience. They were both so scared they weren't talking at all, which made me feel the kind of shame you know you're not going to cure by saying sorry, and where the only thing to do is go out, get more shame. I stomped the carpet fire out and went over to Gleason Street, where Joy and the babies were living with Asshole. Seven. What a kick in the head. Their place was even nicer than Renee's. The house was dark. There were three cars in the driveway, which meant that they were all home and in bed. I stood thinking about that a bit. Then walked back downtown and into a store. I guess it was a store, although I couldn't tell what they were selling. On yellow counters lit from within were these heavy blue plastic tags. I picked one up. On it was the word, Myvox Max. What is it? I said. It's more like, what's it for, is how I'd say it, this kid said. What's it for? I said. Actually, he said, this is probably more the one for you. He handed me an identical tag, but with the word Myvox Min on it. Another kid came over with espresso and cookies. I put down the Myvox Min tag and picked up the Myvox Max tag. How much? I said. You mean money? He said. What does it do? I said. Well, if you're asking is it data repository or information hierarchy domain, he said, the answer to that would be yes and no. They were sweet. Not a line on their faces. When I say they were kids, I mean they were about my age. I've been away a long time, I said. Welcome back, the first kid said. Where were you? The second one said. At the war, I said in the most insulting voice I could muster. Maybe you've heard of it? I have, the first one said respectfully. Thank you for your service. Which one? The second one said. Aren't there two? Didn't they just call one off? The first one said. My cousin's there, the second said. At one of them. At least I think he is. I know he is supposed to go. We were never that close. Anyway, thanks, the first one said and put out his hand. Then I shook it. I wasn't for it, the second one said, but I know it wasn't your deal. Well, I said, it kind of was. You weren't for it or aren't for it, the first said to the second. Both, the second one said. Although, is it still going? Which one? The first one said. Is the one you were at still going? The second one asked me. Yes, I said. Better or worse, do you think? The first one said. Like, in your view, are we winning? Oh, what am I doing? I don't actually care. That's what's so funny about it. Anyway, the second one said and held out his hand and I shook it. They were so nice and accepting and unsuspicious. They were so for me that I walked out smiling and was about a block away before I realized I was still holding Myvox Max. I got under a streetlight and had a look. It seemed like just the plastic tag. Like if you wanted Myvox Max, you handed in that tag and someone went and got Myvox Max for you, whatever it was. 8. Asshole answered the door. His actual name was Evan. We'd gone to school together. I had a vague memory of him in an Indian headdress racing down a hallway. Mike, he said. Can I come in? I said. I think I have to say no to that, he said. I'd like to see the kids, I said. Past midnight, he said. I had a pretty good idea he was lying. Were stores open past midnight? Still, the moon was high and there was something moist and sad in the air that seemed to be saying, well, it's not early. Tomorrow, I said. Would that be okay for you, he said, after I get home from work? I saw we'd agreed to play it reasonable. One way we were playing it reasonable was saying everything like a question. Around 6, I said. Does 6 work for you? He said. The weird part was, I'd never actually seen the two of them together. The wife back there in his bed could have been someone else entirely. I know this isn't easy, he said. You fucked me, I said. I would respectfully disagree with that, he said. No doubt, I said. I didn't fuck you and she didn't, he said. It was a challenging circumstance for all involved. More challenging for some than for others, I said. Would you give me that much? Are we being honest, he said, or tiptoeing around conflict? Honest, I said. And his face did this thing that, for a minute, made me like him again. It was hard for me because I felt like a shit, he said. It was hard for her because she felt like a shit. It was hard for us because while feeling like shits, we were also feeling all the other things we were feeling, which I assure you were and are, as real as anything, a total blessing, if I can say it that way. At that point, I started feeling like a chump, like I was being held down by a bunch of guys so another guy could come over and put his new age fist up my ass, while explaining that having his fist up my ass was far from his first choice and was actually making him feel conflicted. 6 o'clock, I said. 6 o'clock's perfect, he said. Luckily, I'm on flex time. You don't need to be here, I said. If you were me and I was you, would you maybe feel you might somewhat need to be here? He said. One car was a Saab, and one an Escalade, and the third a newer Saab, with two baby seats in it and a stuffed clown I was not familiar with. 3 cars for 2 grown-ups, I thought. What a country. What a couple selfish dicks my wife and her new husband were. I could see that over the years my babies would slowly transform into selfish dick babies, then selfish dick toddlers, kids, teenagers, and adults, with me all that time skulking around like some unclean suspect uncle. That part of town was full of castles. Inside one was a couple embracing. Inside another, a woman had like 9 million little Christmas houses out on a table like she was taking inventory. Across the river, the castles got smaller. By our part of town, the houses were like peasant huts. Inside one peasant hut were 5 kids standing perfectly still on the back of a couch. Then they all leapt off at once and their dogs went crazy. 9. Ma's house was empty. Ma and Harris were sitting on the floor in the living room making phone calls, trying to find somewhere to go. What time is it? I said. Ma looked up at where the clock used to be. The clock's on the sidewalk, she said. I went out. The clock was under a coat. It was 10. Evan had fucked me. I considered going back, demanding to see the kids, but by the time I got there, it would be 11 and he'd still have a decent point, re the lateness of the hour. The sheriff walked in. Don't get up, he said to Ma. Ma got up. Get up, he said to me. I stayed sitting. You the one who threw down Mr. Cleese? The sheriff said. He's just back from the war, Ma said. Thank you for your service, the sheriff said. Might I ask you to refrain from throwing people down in the future? He also threw me down, Harris said. My thing is, I don't want to go around arresting veterans, the sheriff said. I myself am a veteran. So if you help me by not throwing anyone else down, I'll help you by not arresting you. Deal? He was also going to burn the house down, Ma said. I wouldn't recommend burning anything down, the sheriff said. He ain't himself, Ma said. I mean, look at him. The sheriff had never seen me before, but it was like admitting he had no basis for assessing how I looked would have been a professional embarrassment. He does look tired, the sheriff said. Plenty strong, though, Harris said. Threw me right down. Where are you folks off to tomorrow? The sheriff said. Suggestions? Ma said. A friend, a family member? The sheriff said. Renee's? I said. Failing that, the shelter on Friston? the sheriff said.
One thing I am not doing is going to Renee's, Ma said. Everyone in that house is too high and mighty. They already think of us as low.
Well, we are low, said Harris, compared to them.
The other thing I'm not doing is going to any beeping shelter, Ma said. They got crabs at shelters.
When we first started dating, I had crabs from that shelter, Harris said helpfully.
I'm sorry this is happening, the sheriff said. Everything's backwards and inverted.
I'll say, Ma said. Here I work for a church and my son's a hero with a silver star. Dragged a marine out by the beeping foot. We got the letter. And where am I? Out on the street.
The sheriff had switched off and was waiting to make his break for the door and get back to whatever was real to him.
Find some place to live, folks, he advised genially as he left.
Harris and I dragged two mattresses back in. They still had the sheets and blankets on and all, but the sheet on their mattress had grass stains on one edge and the pillows smelled like mud. Then we spent a long night in the bear house.
10. In the morning, Ma called some ladies she'd known as a young mother, but one had a disc out and another had cancer, and a third had twins who'd both just been diagnosed manic depressive. In the light of day, Harris braved up again.
So this court-martial thing, he said. Was that the worst thing you ever did? Or was there worse things which you did but just didn't get caught?
They cleared him of that, Ma said tersely.
Well, they cleared me of breaking and entering that time, Harris said.
Anyways, how is this any of your business, Ma said.
Probably he wants to talk, Harris said. Get some air in there. Good for the soul.
Look at his face, Hare, Ma said.
Harris looked at my face.
Sorry I mentioned it, he said.
Then the sheriff was back. He made me and Harris drag the mattresses out. On the porch, we watched him padlock the door.
18 years you have been my dear home, Ma said, possibly imitating some Sioux from a movie.
You're going to want to get a van over here, the sheriff said.
My son served in the war, Ma said, and look how you're doing me.
I'm the same guy that was here yesterday, the sheriff said, and for some reason framed his face with his hands. Remember me? You told me that already. I thanked him for his service. Call a van or your shit's going to the dump.
See how they treat a lady who works at a church? Ma said.
Ma and Harris picked through their crap, found a suitcase, filled the suitcase with clothes. Then we drove to Renee's. My feeling was, oh, this will be funny.
11. Although yes and no, that was just one of my feelings. Another was, oh, Ma, I remember when you were young and wore your hair in braids and I would have died to see you sink so low. Another was, you crazy old broad, you narked me out last night. What was up with that? Another was, Mom, Mommy, let me kneel at your feet and tell you what me and Smelton and Ricky G did at Al Raz. And then you stroke my hair and tell me anybody would have done the exact same thing.
As we crossed the Roll Creek Bridge, I could see that Ma was feeling, just let that Renee deny me. I will hand that little beeper beep and beep on a platter. But then, bango, by the time we got to the far side and the air had gone from river cool to regular again, her face had changed to, oh God, if Renee denies me in front of Ryan's parents and they once again find me trash, I will die. I will simply die.
12. Renee did deny her in front of Ryan's parents, who did find her trash. But she didn't die.
You should have seen their faces as we walked in. Renee looked stricken. Ryan looked stricken. Ryan's mom and dad were trying so hard not to look stricken that they kept knocking things over. A vase went down as Ryan's dad blundered forward, trying to look chipper slash welcoming. Ryan's mom lurched into a painting and ended up holding it in her crossed red-sweatered arms.
Is this the baby? I said.
Ma turned on me again.
What do you think it is, she said. A midget that can't talk?
This is Martini, yes, Renee said, holding the baby out to me. Ryan cleared his throat, shot Renee a look like, I thought we discussed this, love muffin. Renee changed the baby's course, swerved it up, like if she held it high enough, that would negate the need for me to hold it, it being so close to the overhead light and all. Which hurt.
Fuck it, I said. What do you think I'm going to do?
Please don't say fuck in our home, Ryan said.
Please don't tell my son what the beepy can beep and say, Ma said, him being in the war and all.
Thank you for your service,
Ryan's dad said.
We can easily go to a hotel, Ryan's mom said.
You are not going to any hotel, Mom, Ryan said. They can go to a hotel.
We're not going to a hotel, Ma said.
You can easily go to a hotel, Mother. You love a good hotel, Renee said, especially when we're paying. Even Harris was nervous.
A hotel sounds lovely, he said. It's been many a day since I reclined in a nice place of that nature as a hotel.
You'd send your own mother, who works for a church, along with your brother, a Silver Star hero just home from the war, to some flea bag? Ma said.
Yes, Renee said. Can I at least hold the baby? I said.
Not on my watch, Ryan said.
Jane and I would like you to know how much we supported and still do support your mission, Ryan's father said.
A lot of people don't know how many schools you fellows built over there, Ryan's mother said.
People tend to focus on the negative, Ryan's dad said.
What's that proverb? Ryan's mother said. To make something or other, you first have to break a lot of something or other.
I think he could hold the baby, said Renee. I mean, we're standing right here.
Ryan winced, shook his head.
The baby writhed like it too believed its fate was being decided.
Having all these people think I was going to hurt the baby made me imagine hurting the baby. Did imagining hurting the baby mean that I would hurt the baby? Did I want to hurt the baby? No, Jesus. But did the fact that I had no intention of hurting the baby mean that I wouldn't, when push came to shove, hurt the baby? Had I, in the recent past, had the experience of having no intention of doing activity A, then suddenly finding myself right in the middle of doing activity A?
I don't want to hold the baby, I said.
I appreciate that, Ryan said. That's cool of you.
I want to hold this pitcher, I said, and picked up a pitcher and held it like a baby, with the lemonade spilling out of it. And once the lemonade was pooling nicely on the hardwood floor, spiked the pitcher down.
You really hurt my feelings, I said.
Then was out on the sidewalk, walking fast. 13. Then was back in that store. Two different guys were there, younger than the earlier two. They might have been high schoolers. I handed over the Myvox Max tag.
Oh, shit, snap, the one guy said. We were wondering where that was.
We were about to call it in, the other guy said, bringing over espresso and cookies.
Is it valuable? I said.
Ha, oh boy, the first one said, and got some kind of special cloth from under the counter and dusted the tag off and put it back on display.
What is it? I said.
It's more like, what's it for, is how I'd say it, the first guy said.
What's it for? I said.
This might be more in your line, he said, and handed me the Myvox Min tag.
I've been away a long time, I said.
Us too, the second kid said.
We just got out of the army, the first kid said.
Then we all took turns saying where we'd been. Turned out me and the first guy had been in basically the same place.
Wait, so you were at Al-Raz? I said.
I was totally at Al-Raz, the first guy said.
I was never in the shit, I admit it, the second guy said, although I did once run over a dog with a forklift.
I asked the first guy if he remembered the baby goat, the pocked wall, the crying toddler, the dark arched doorway, the doves that suddenly exploded out from under that peeling gray eave.
I wasn't over by that, he said. I was more over by the river and the upside-down boat and that little family all in red that kept turning up everywhere you looked.
I knew exactly where he'd been. It was unbelievable how many times, pre- and post-exploding doves, I'd caught sight, on the horizon, down by the river, of some imploring or crouching or fleeing figure in red.
It ended up cool with that dog, though, the second guy said. He lived in all. By the time I left, he'd be, like, riding right up alongside me in the forklift.
A family of 9 Indian Americans came in, and the second guy went over to them with the espresso and cookies.
Al-Raz, wow, I said in an exploratory way.
For me, the first guy said, Al-Raz was the worst day of the whole deal.
Yes, me too, exactly, I said.
I fucked up big time at Al-Raz, he said.
Suddenly, I found I couldn't breathe.
My boy Melvin, he said, got a chunk of shrapnel right in the groin, because of me. I waited too long to call it in. There was this, like, lady party going on right nearby.
about 15 gals in this corner store, and kids with them. So I waited. Too bad for Melvin, for Melvin's groin. Now he was waiting for me to tell the fucked up thing I'd done. I put down my Vox Min, picked it up, put it down. "Melvin's okay, though," he said, and did a little two-finger tap on his own groin. "He's home, you know, in grad school. He's fucking, apparently." "Glad to hear it," I said. "Probably he even sometimes rides up alongside you in the forklift." "Sorry," he said. I looked at the clock on the wall. It didn't seem to have any hands. It was just a moving pattern of yellow and white. "Do you know what time it is?" I said. The guy looked up at the clock. 6, he said. 14. Out on the street, I found a payphone and called Renee. "I'm sorry," I said. "Sorry about that picture." "Yeah, well," she said in her non-fancy voice, "you're going to buy me a new one." I could hear she was trying to make up. "No," I said, "I won't be doing that." "Where are you, Mikey?" she said. "Nowhere," I said. "Where are you going?" she said. "Home," I said, and hung up. 15. Coming up, Gleason, I had that feeling. My hands and feet didn't know exactly what they wanted, but they were trending toward push past whatever, whoever blocks you, get inside, start wrecking shit by throwing it around, shout out whatever's in your mind, see what happens. I was on a, like, shame slide. You know what I mean? Once back in high school, this guy paid me to clean some gunk out of his pond. You snagged the gunk with a rake, then rake hurled it. At one point, the top of my rake flew into the gunk pile. When I went to retrieve it, there were like a million tadpoles, dead and dying, at whatever age they are when they've got those swollen bellies like little pregnant ladies. What the dead and dying had in common was their tender white underbellies had been torn open by the gunk suddenly crashing down on them from on high. The difference was the dying were the ones doing the mad fear gesticulating. I tried to save a few, but they were so tender, all I did by handling them was torture them worse. Maybe someone could have said to the guy who'd hired me, I have to stop now, I feel bad for killing so many tadpoles. But I couldn't, so I kept on rake curling. With each rake curl, I thought, I'm making more bloody bellies. The fact that I kept rake curling started making me mad at the frogs. It was like either A, I was a terrible guy who was knowingly doing this rotten thing over and over, or B, it wasn't so rotten really, just normal, and the way to confirm it was normal was to keep doing it over and over. Years later, at Al Raz, it was a familiar feeling. Here was the house. Here was a house where they cooked, laughed, fucked. Here was a house that, in the future, when my name came up, would get all hushed, and Joy would be like, "Although Evan is, no, not your real daddy, me and Daddy Evan feel you don't need to be around Daddy Mike all that much, because what me and Daddy Evan really care about is you two growing up strong and healthy. And sometimes mommies and daddies need to make a special atmosphere in which that can happen." I looked for the 3 cars in the driveway. 3 cars meant all home. Did I want all home? I did. I wanted all, even the babies, to see and participate and be sorry for what had happened to me. But instead of 3 cars in the driveway, there were 5. Evan was on the porch, as expected. Also on the porch were Joy, plus 2 strollers, plus Ma, plus Harris, plus Ryan. Renee was trotting all awkward up the driveway, trailed by Ryan's mom, pressing a handkerchief to her forehead, and Ryan's dad bringing up the rear due to a limp I hadn't noticed before. "You," I thought, "you jokers? You nutty fuckers are all God sent to stop me? That is a riot. That is so fucking funny. What are you going to stop me with? Your girth? Your good intentions? Your target genes? Your years of living off the fat of the land? Your belief that anything and everything can be fixed with talk, talk, endless yapping, hopeful talk?" The contours of the coming disaster expanded to include the deaths of all present. My face got hot and I thought, go, go, go. Ma tried and failed to rise from the porch swing. Ryan helped her up by the elbow all courtly. Then suddenly something softened in me, maybe at the sight of Ma so weak, and I dropped my head and waded all docile into that crowd of know-nothings, thinking,
Okay, you sent me, now bring me back. Find some way to bring me back, you fuckers, or you are the sorriest bunch of bastards the world has ever known. My chivalric fiasco. Once again, it was torchlight night. Around 9, I went out to pee. Back in the woods was the big tank that sourced our fake river, plus a pile of old armor. Don Murray flew past me, looking frazzled. Then I heard a sob. On her back, near the armor pile, I found Martha from Scullery, peasant skirt up around her waist. Martha, that guy is my boss. Oh my God, oh my God. I knew Don Murray was her boss because Don Murray was also my boss. All of a sudden, she recognized me. Ted, don't tell, she said. Please, it's no big deal. Nate can't know. It would kill him. Then hightailed it out to parking, eyes black underneath from crying. Cooking had laid out a big spread on a crude table over by Castle Tower 4, authentic pig heads and whole chickens and blood pudding. Don Murray stood there moodily picking at some coleslaw and gave me the friendliest headshake he'd ever given me. Women, he said. See me, said a note on my locker next morning. In Don Murray's office was Martha. So, Ted, Don Murray said, last night you witnessed something that, if not viewed in the right light, might seem wrongish. Martha and I find that funny, don't we, Mar? I just now gave Martha $1,000, in case there was some kind of misunderstanding. Martha now feels that we had a fling, which, both being married, we so much regret. What with the drinking, plus the romance of Torchlight Night, what happened, Martha? Martha, we got carried away, had a fling. Don, voluntary fling. Martha, voluntary fling. Don, and not only that, Ted, Martha here is moving up, from Scullery to Floater Thespian. But let's underscore, you are not moving up, Martha, because of our voluntary fling. It's coincidental. Why are you moving up? Martha, coincidental. Don, coincidental plus always had a killer work ethic. Ted, you're also moving up, out of janitorial, to pacing guard. Which was amazing. I'd been in janitorial 6 years. A man of my caliber. That was a joke MQ and I sometimes shared. Aaron would call down and go, MQ, someone threw up in the Grove of Sorrow. And MQ would be like, a man of my caliber? Or Aaron would go, Ted, some lady dropped her necklace down in the pig pen and is pitching a shit fit. And I would go, a man of my caliber? Aaron would be like, get going, it's not funny, she's right up in my grill. Our pigs were fake, and our slop was fake, and our poop was fake, but still it was no fun to have to don waders and drag the sifter boy deluxe into the pig pen to, for example, find that lady's necklace. For best results with the sifter boy deluxe, you had to first lug the fake pigs off to one side. Being on auto, the pigs would continue grunting as you lugged them, which might look funny if you happen to be holding that particular pig wrong. Some random guy might go, look, dude's breastfeeding that pig. And everyone might laugh. Therefore, a promotion to pacing guard was very much welcomed by me. I was currently the only working person in our family, Mom being sick, Beth being shy, Dad having sadly cracked his spine recently when a car he was fixing fell on him. We also had some windows that needed replacing. All winter, Beth would go around shyly vacuuming up snow. If you came in while she was vacuuming, she would prove too shy to continue. That night at home, Dad calculated we could soon buy Mom a tilting bed. Dad, if you keep moving up the ladder, maybe in time we can get me a back brace. Me, absolutely, I'm going to make that happen. After dinner, driving into town to fill Mom's prescriptions for pain and Beth's prescription for shyness and Dad's prescription for pain, I passed Martha and Nate's. I honked, did a lean-in wave, pulled over, got out. Hey, Ted, said Nate. What's up, I said. Well, our place sucks, Nate said. Look at this place. Sucks, right? I just can't seem to keep my energy up. True, their place was pretty bad. The roof was patched with blue sheeting. Their kids were doing timid leaps off a wheelbarrow into a mud puddle. A skinny pony was under the swing set, licking itself raw like it wanted to be clean when it finally made its break for a nicer living situation. I mean, where are the grown-ups around here? Nate said. Then he picked the snots wrapper off the ground and looked for somewhere to put it,
then dropped it again and it landed on his shoe.
Perfect, he said. Story of my life.
Geez, Martha said, and plucked it off.
Don't you go south on me, too, Nate said. You're all I got, babe.
No, I am not, Martha said. You got the kids.
One more thing goes wrong, I'm shooting myself, Nate said.
I kind of doubted he had to get up and go for that, although you never know.
So what's going on at your guys' work? Nate said. This one here has been super moody, even though she just got herself promoted.
I could feel Martha looking at me like, Ted, I'm in your hands here. I figured it was her call. Based on my experience of life, which I have not exactly hit out of the park, I tend to agree with that thing about if it's not broke, don't fix it. And we'll go even further too, even if it is broke, leave it alone. You'll probably make it worse.
So said something about, well, promotions can be hard, they cause a lot of stress.
The gratitude was just beaming off Martha. She walked me back to the car, gave me 3 tomatoes they'd grown, which, tell the truth, looked kind of geriatric. Tiny, timid, wrinkled.
Thank you, she whispered. You saved my life.
Next morning in my locker were my pacing guard uniform and a Dixie cup with a yellow pill in it. Hooray, I thought, finally, a medicated role. In came Mrs. Bridges from Health and Safety with an MSDS on the pill. Mrs. Bridges, so this is just going to be 100 milligrams of nightlife to help with the improv. The thing with nightlife is you're going to want to stay hydrated. I took the pill, went to the throne room. I was supposed to pace in front of a door behind which a king was supposedly thinking. There really was a king in there, Ed Phillips. They put a king in there because one of our scripted tropes was messenger arrives, charges past pacing guard, throws open door, king calls messenger reckless, calls pacing guard a lackwit, messenger winces, closes door, has a brief exchange with pacing guard. Soon guests had nearly filled our fun spot. The messenger, a.k.a. Kyle Sperling, barged past me, threw open the door. Ed called Kyle reckless, called me a lackwit. Kyle winced, closed door. Kyle, I apologize if I have violated protocol. I blanked on my line, which was, your rashness bespeaks a manly passion. Instead, I was like, no problem. Kyle, a real pro, did not miss a beat. Kyle, handing me envelope. Please see that he gets this. It is of the utmost urgency. Me. His Majesty is weighed down with thought. Kyle. With many burdens of thought? Me. Right. Many burdens of thought. Just then the nightlife kicked in. My mouth went dry. I felt it was nice of Kyle not to give me shit about my mess up. It occurred to me that I really liked Kyle. Loved him even. Like a brother. A comrade. Noble comrade. I felt we had weathered many storms together. It seemed, for example, that we had, at some point in some far distant land, huddled together at the base of a castle wall, hot tar roiling down, and there shared a rueful laugh as if to say, it is all but brief, so let us live. And then, what ho, had charged. Up crude ladders with manly imprecations, although I could not recall the exact imprecations, nor the outcome of said charge. Kyle departed anon. I did happily entertain our guests, through use of wit and various jibes, glad that I had, after my many travails, arrived at a station in life from whence I could impart such merriment to all and sundry. Soon the pleasantness of that day, already considerable, was much improved by the arrival of my benefactor, Don Murray. Quoth Don Murray with a gladsome wink, Ted, you know what you and me should do sometime? Go on a trip or something together, like a fishing trip, camping, whatever. My heart swelled at this notion. To fish, to hunt, to make camp with this noble gentleman, to wander wide fields and verdant woods, to rest at day's end in some quiet bower, beside a coursing stream, and there, amidst the muted whinnying of our steeds, speak softly of many things, of honor, of love, of danger, of duty well executed. But then there occurred a fateful event. To wit, the arrival of the aforementioned Martha, in the guise of a spirit, Spirit 3, to be precise, along with 2 other damsels in white, these being Megan and Tiffany. This trio of maids did effect a jolly ruse. They were ghosts who didst haunt this castle, with much shaking of chain and sad laments, as our guests in that fun spot
confined by the red ropes, did gape and yaw and shriek at the spectacle provided therein. Glimpsing Martha's visage, which, though merry, bore withal a trace of some dismal memory, and I knew well what it was, I grew, in spite of my recent good fortune, somewhat melancholy. Noting this change in my disposition, Martha did speak to me softly in an aside. Martha. It's cool, Ted. I'm over it. Seriously, I mean it. Drop it. Oh, that a woman of such enviable virtue, who had suffered so, would deign to speak to me in a manner so frank and direct, consenting by her words to keep her disgrace in such bleak confinement. Martha. Ted, you okay? To which I made reply, Verily, I have not been well, but distracted and remiss, but presently am restored unto myself, and hereby do make copious apology for my earlier neglect with respect to thee, dear lady. Martha. Easy there, Ted. At this time, Don Murray himself did step forward and, extending his hand, placed it upon my breast as if to restrain me. Ted, I swear to God, quoth he, put a sock in it or I will flush you down the shitter so fast. And verily, part of my mind now didst give me sound counsel. I must endeavor to dampen these feelings, lest I commit some rash act, converting my good fortune into woe. Yet the heart of man is an organ that doth not offer itself up to facile prediction, and shall not be easy tamed. For, as I looked upon Don Murray, many thoughts did assemble in my mind, like unto thunderclouds. Of what use is life, if the living man doth not pursue righteousness and enforce justice, as God granteth him the power to do so? Was it a happy thing that a fiend went about unhindered? Must the weak forever wander this goodly orb unprotected? At these thoughts, something honest and manly began to assert itself within me, whereupon, secrecy not befitting a gentleman,